What do you base the dates on? Do you base it on carbon isotopes?
No, we don't. We based dating on the evidence that we discover.
Right, but like some of it is based on carbon, right?
No,
carbon
I don't believe in carbon date 14 at all.
You don't?
No.
Why not?
Carbon date 14 never given accurate dating.
All right, even Zahi Hawass himself recognized this was not the best position for a scientist to find themselves in. Not exactly the smartest quote in the world you want sitting next to your name. So when he was on my friend Matt Bell's Limitless podcast, he had this to say to save face.
Let's talk about the Joe Rogan episode for a second, if we could. I'd just love to get your thoughts on the experience. Well, I wanted to get your thoughts. Like, what was the experience like? What was Joe like?
You know, I want first to explain that maybe some misunderstanding in some of the explanation. For example, he believes in carbon date 14. But you have to understand that when scientists make any discovery, Egyptologist has to look at it, because scientists, their interpretation could be wrong. Then I said carbon date 14 something is not correct. Why? If you look at the Great Pyramid could contain stones, could contain wood, and also something called Mafet. And Mafet in hieroglyphic is the red paint that the Egyptian used it to write the name of the Ganges. Then if you take a small piece of wood and you try to do carbon date 14, the age, it doesn't mean the age of the pyramid. It is the age of that tree that you took the piece from that tree to construct the pyramid. There is some German who came and they took one small sample of the name of Semsu Khufu. This is friends of Khufu, the name of the Ganges who were involved in the construction of the pyramid. And they did make analysis and they said it's 15,000 years ago. It could be, because this is could be the age of the quarry, not to be the age of the pyramid. Then it doesn't, some people think that I do not believe in science. It's not true. I believe in science, but we need to look at what science produces in Egyptology. We are using right now CT scan. We are using DNA, working with infrared, ultrasound. All these techniques really help a lot in many things. But also in the same time, if someone found a void inside the pyramid, someone who doesn't have an Egyptology background could make the interpretation wrong. But Egyptologists can look at it and put it in the correct way. And this is why some people think that when we talked that I don't believe in science, it is not true at all.
In other words, if you don't know the timeline, you're not going to know when to say, hey, the carbon 14 dating isn't quite so accurate here. Because that's exactly how Zahi Hawass uses radiocarbon dating. He doesn't put the radiocarbon dating first, he puts it second to the written timeline from the 4th dynasty forward. And we're going to discuss that a little bit. We're also going to discuss radiocarbon dating in general. How does this work? Why is it used to date things in Egyptology and in archaeology? When does it fall apart? Like, when is it not accurate? What are some of the pitfalls of using it? And why would Zahi Hawass say such things? Is it a personal, professional, combination of both? So, strap yourselves in. We're going to talk about some stuff that most people that are into science have a pretty good idea of already. And then we're going to talk about, we'll get a little speculative here. And, hopefully you enjoy yourselves. Hi, my name is Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. Radiocarbon dating is based on the steady decay of the carbon-14 isotope. Isotopes are variations in an element's number of neutrons. The number of protons, well, that's what makes an element. But the number of neutrons can vary, and carbon-14 lends itself particularly well to dating things. Because all living things absorb the carbon-14 that rains down onto them from the cosmos, and this absorption stops when the organism dies. Now, as time passes, the carbon-14 will slowly change into other elements, and this rate of change can be predicted. This allows scientists to determine the age of organisms that passed away centuries or even thousands of years ago, and this has been used to great effect over the last 80 years. This was first discussed by Willard Libby, a chemistry professor and part of the Manhattan Project team, so he was no slouch, and in the late 1940s he came up with this idea and started testing it. He went to work on the applied science part of the hypothesis, and with the help of an anthropologist and taking samples from several ancient artifacts with pretty robust dates behind them already, he eventually announced a working technique by 1949. And in 1960, the radiocarbon dating was in such widespread use that it had become a standard means of dating ancient artifacts. By using artifacts with solid dendrochronology, that's tree ring dating, they were able to fine-tune the application against a known date in the distant past. Real science. So as you can imagine, radiocarbon dating has been used widely in the world of Egyptology. As a matter of fact, that wood that they tested in the beginning to make sure that radiocarbon dating worked, it came from Senusret III's tomb. And there's a funerary boat that was in his tomb, excuse me. And the reason that they used that wood wasn't because of dendrochronology. It didn't have tree rings that they had these accurate dates of. They knew when he'd been buried because of written records. The written records, the King's List in particular, the many variations of the King's List, a handful, these are considered to be amongst the best written records of the ancient world that we have. And they follow these until they get kind of biblical in nature. I mean, they start having like guys that live thousands of years, and the records go back like a really, really long time, to like 30,000 years or so ago. And this causes, you know, some people, they just forget about it. Some people seem to have never known it to begin with.
You never heard about, have you heard about, you know about the King's List, right? The old King's List that goes back 30,000 whatever years.
Who said that?
You never seen it? It's not in hieroglyphs?
This is not true.
It's not true?
No. This is a speculation from people who knows nothing.
The King's List video is coming, I swear, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But anyway, my point here is the written records of ancient Egypt, the King's List in particular, are considered to be like the gold standard, and they're considered to be less robust the older they go. And this is why radiocarbon dating has been used so heavily in those times to date things. In a 2008 paper, we read this. Recent radiocarbon studies of the Old Kingdom have produced dates that are significantly offset from historical estimates. As part of the Egyptian Chronology Project at the University of Oxford, the procedures and results from many of these studies are currently being examined. The data are being modeled using Bayesian statistics, and the key methodologies from sample collection to pretreatment are being evaluated. The insights gained are enabling the performance of radiocarbon dating to be optimized for dynastic sites. This update includes simple archaeological and statistical approaches that have already proven successful. Eventually, the Oxford Egyptian Chronology Project aims to combine existing and new measurements to give a precise radiocarbon-based chronology for ancient Egypt. Well, now this sounds entirely reasonable because the written records, I mean, even if they're really, really, really robust, are going to be less robust than the hard scientific data that radiocarbon dating gives in general. I mean, this is kind of a no-brainer. Anyway, the paper continues. The chronology of pre- and early dynastic Egypt remains one of the most flexible yet complex issues in our understanding of early Egypt. A recent compilation of radiocarbon measurements showed that in excess of a third of all dates published relate to the pre- and early dynastic context. Furthermore, more than two-thirds of the radiocarbon dates prior to the first dynasty have been obtained during the last 20 years, as compared with only half of the first and second dynasty dates. This is as reflective of the increase in research into the pre-dynastic as it is of our application of scientific dating methods. As part of the Egyptian Chronology Project of the University of Oxford, a new series of radiocarbon measurements is being made on Egyptian material, focusing primarily on the period from the 1st to the 20th dynasties, with a number of samples currently being selected for the 1st and 2nd dynasties. Subject to relative dating, the lack of historical documentation allows these dates to influence the chronology of this formative period to a much greater extent than from the 3rd dynasty onwards. And there's the rub. It's subject to relative dating, they say. In other words, what we're getting at here is there's a lack of written records in the pre-dynastic and the first three dynasties, and this allows them to do this, because you don't need the radiocarbon dating when you've got written records already, right? Well, that sounds kind of crazy, but all of a sudden that explains why Zahi Hawass says things like this.
When scientists make any discovery, Egyptologists has to look at it, because scientists, their interpretation could be wrong.
And this isn't just me that's saying this. Oh, no. As a matter of fact, the paper I've been quoting from is from the Czech Institute of Egyptology. And in this paper, they have 19 different people from all over the world that have different expertise in Egyptology. And they're all applying their expertise in different ways to date the first through third dynasties and the pre-dynastic time as well, excuse me. And in the foreword to this paper, we read the following. The overview of individual contributions also shows that Egyptology, dealing with the 3rd and early 2nd millennium BC, still prefers to follow rather traditional paths of research. The reasons for this tendency may be manifold. One of them yet relates to the fact that sampling and subsequent analysis abroad, in many cases, no other solution would have been possible, is strictly prohibited in Egypt. Indeed, a very rare exception in the whole Middle East. In other words, they don't need no freaking carbon dating. And now this paper is 17 years old, but Zahi Hawass was more in charge even of Egyptology back in those days than he is now, one could argue anyway. Certainly was in official capacity. But you would think that he would get some pushback. But no, he doesn't. He's received almost no pushback. You don't see people complaining about this happening. You don't see his colleagues saying, boy, this is an issue. And I dare say the reason is because if you're an archaeologist or an Egyptologist, going toe-to-toe with Zahi Hawass is a great way to end up not being allowed to come and hang out in Egypt.
This man is a thief, and I don't go to talk to him. I don't go to talk to him. This man did bad things. I don't go to his day. This man. And I want to call. I want to leave this man not to enter this country.
But since all these guys seem to just kind of play follow the leader and do whatever the bigwigs in their communities tell them to, it falls on guys like me to, you know, set things straight. So, fuck, I'm sorry for the universe. I don't really know what else to say about that. Or I guess you could look to the physicist Mike D, who has used Bayesian modeling to determine how long the pre-dynastic and early dynasties took to get developed and take hold. Now, his work challenges the timeline by centuries, and big surprise, it has not been fully accepted by Egyptologists. Now, Mike D's work doesn't get opposed by Zahi Hawass and his friends like the radiocarbon dating of the 4th dynasty does, not even close. But Mike does end one of his interviews saying that he hopes archaeologists and Egyptologists will consider his data. But, you know, by the 4th dynasty, radiocarbon dating, well, it's basically completely worthless to Egyptologists as far as dating Egypt goes, which is insane to me, which is why we're talking about this. In 1984, the first carbon dating expedition of the three big pyramids and the Giza Plateau in general was led by Zahi Hawass and Mark Lehner, and was financed by the Edgar Cayce Foundation, no less. Now, in 1985, David Koch's foundation sent them back, the same guys, and again, they dated the Giza Plateau and several other 4th Dynasty edifices. Edify? The wood ash used in the mortar between masonry courses is what was tested, not the stone, obviously. And the 1984 project, well, it had an average date of 400 years before the written records. It was off by 400 years. Now, the 1985 project was 100 to 200 years older on average. This tendency for the radiocarbon dating to be older than the written records by long enough to warrant some scrutiny, well, this goes back into pre-dynastic times, as I've already discussed, and it also goes forward into the 5th dynasty. By the Middle Kingdom, well, this is stabilized, and it really doesn't need the same kind of scrutiny anymore. They pretty much line up. But this does give us this time before that's off by a lot, including the 4th dynasty, which is when the three big boys on Giza were supposedly made. So now we've got a problem, right? So what do we get? We get the old wood hypothesis. Now, this is basically the idea that the ancient Egyptians, they used old wood that was, you know, a couple 300 years old. And every single one of the things that we've tested from the fourth dynasty, the wood that was burnt to make their mortar, well, that wood was hundreds of years older than what was going on at the time. And that is a little bit of a stretch as far as I'm concerned, but you would think they had some evidence for it. They don't. And not only that, this is in complete violation of Occam's razor, and it also ignores the basic knowledge that we have of ancient Egypt. I mean, King Tutankhamun, he came much later in Egyptian history, but his burial marks the gold standard of what we found in a pharaonic tomb. I mean, he's the best we have to date. And there's a reason for this. He was erased from history. His name was scrubbed from the books. And this is not the only example of this sort of thing happening in ancient Egypt or the ancient world. So then you have to ask yourself, which makes more sense? That every single building throughout the fourth dynasty that used mortar that we've tested is hundreds of years older than it's supposed to be, or they deleted a dynasty, or they burn a bunch of old wood. That's the thing, is we know they deleted dynasties. We know they deleted rulers. There's a very good chance that that's exactly what happened. And to me, that makes way more sense than positing that every single building just used older wood. Now, if they had some evidence for this burn, like some mass burn pit where they made just a ton of ash with a bunch of old wood or something, or some written records of it, that would be different. But in fact, we have written records of them importing wood from Lebanon and whatnot during those days. So they definitely had new wood in the area at the time. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they would probably have shown up, at least a little bit of that would have shown up in the mortar of one of the most expensive building projects of the time. Like a person who believes in the Bible over carbon dating, Zahi Hawass believes in the King's List over carbon dating. Now, personally, I'm of the opinion that these pyramids were like multi-generational projects, so that would explain some of why we get this disparity as far as I'm concerned. But the idea that they deleted a dynasty or one individual ruler's is absolutely, to me, way high on the list of reasons why these dates could be off. Certainly more reasonable than some mystical burn pit that we don't have any evidence for, because again, I'm going to hammer at this for a second. It's every single fucking thing that they've tested. If it was half the buildings had the wrong wood, I could absolutely buy into this. But when it's the entire dynasty, it's like, come on, you guys. You know something's up there. But you're not going to get anything from Zahi Hawass that's going to allow for that. And part of that is some people say it's because he's a Muslim. And I don't think that has really as much to do with it as the fact that he's a nationalist. He is proud of Egyptians. And I don't have any problem with that, man. Imagine waking up and like becoming of age and seeing the pyramid and like studying the shit and being like, man, my great-great-great-great-grandpa did that. Be a proud motherfucker too. So I don't take issue with that. But I do think that it sometimes taints where he's coming from. So, like, he thinks that these written records, it's like, no. I mean, the guy always seems to think that every one of us thinks that aliens did it, right? So he's got this weird, skewed idea of pseudoscience. And I think that has a big part of his mental motivations to oppose us so heavily. But what do I know? I'm just some stupid-ass electrician, right? Maybe Zahi has a point. So let's talk about the limitations and shortcomings of carbon dating. Now, the first thing to note is the 60 to 50,000 years before present is basically the hard limit. Any carbon 14 will basically be degraded by then, and therefore the method won't work. There's nothing to detect. Also, contamination is a huge issue, and this is one that requires painstaking, careful work. You got to gather it, store it, and transport it in a way that is absolutely perfect. Otherwise, just a tiny bit of carbon seeping in there can completely ruin things. Sample size, this is also an issue. You can't just use a teeny little sample. It's got to be, I think, a few hundred milligrams. I'll put some links below so you can look and read all the pertinent information. And also, over time, there has been more or less carbon 14 raining down from the cosmos on us. And this is something that we are slowly like mapping out, slowly getting a grasp on, but it's painstaking. It takes a lot of time. Things like dendrochronology are really helpful then, because you get these hard lines. And it's funny, because you see Egyptology trying to treat the King's List in that way, and it's not. It's not the same as dendrochronology when you can say, this is X number of years ago because I can count tree rings, and you can. Some would say you can only go back as many years as trees were alive, but you can overlap tree rings from different generations of trees. If this tree lived 150 years and this tree lived 150 years and they overlapped 30 years, you can line up those rings in those 30 years and go back, you know, 270 years, and you can keep doing this shit for a long time. And they do this. So anyway, they are slowly getting a grasp on all of this. Now, the carbon-14 dating is certainly not perfect. Anytime you get contamination of the samples, the dates are going to be all stupid because a tiny bit of contamination throws things way the fuck off. But it is pretty wild when you look at the situation overall. When you look at how Zahiawas is rejecting it in a way that's clearly, it looks more religious to me than it does anything else. But like I said, I'm pretty sure that it has a lot to do with nationalism and a lot to do with this egotistical battle against pseudoscience. But it is wild. Let's be honest. It is absolutely wild to see the number one Egyptologist on the planet saying that he doesn't believe in carbon dating, and the people backing him up almost to a man, and nobody's saying anything. You don't see archaeologists out there yaying. The only criticisms that I've seen are them saying that he was mean to other Egyptologists and archaeologists because he didn't give him credit where credit was due, because he discovered everything.
I discovered a tomb in a site called Abusir, and this all what I discovered. This is my discovery of everything. Every piece of sand here tells us about the builder of the pyramid. This is in hieroglyphic. Mm-hmm. And he said, in the left here.
That those tools are...
No, more. No doubt, no.
Where?
You know, here there is two, there is more. Here. To the left.
To the left.
To the left. No, what? Again. Now I come back.
What technology can you use to discover, like, you these know, underground caverns and chambers?
So
and
all what I do is digging.
That's it?
That's it.
What if these Italian guys are onto something and you can find more stuff?
I want you to come to see what I do and what I discover.
I want to talk to the Italians too.
And what I discover, I can show it to you.
Please do. Jamie, Zeptepi, did you find anything about that?
But if you watched his appearances, you've seen Zahi is a very emotional person. And that's okay in your personal life. But in his professional life as a quote-unquote scientist, well, a scientist that injects emotion into their work is a lot the same as a cop that injects emotion into their work. Don't. You're going to do your job wrong then. All right. Thank you very much. Hope to see you at the Cosmic Summit. If not, I will see you soon. Have a great day.